Five, four, three, two, one. Are we live? Hey, make murder illegal again. Make self-defense legal again. Hopefully. Hey, I'm Ian Houseman, and I'm coming to you live from Facebook, YouTube, and Rumble. If you're watching me on Rumble or Facebook, click on the link to the... if you're watching me on YouTube or Facebook, click on the link to my Rumble stream, just in case big tech doesn't like what we're talking about, because we're talking about some touchy subjects, and that shouldn't be touchy, but we're dealing with the party of Preston Brooks. So, who was Preston Brooks? In 1856, the world's greatest deliberative body, that would be the U.S. Congress, became a combat zone, and the Democrat representative from South Carolina, Preston Brooks, assaulted the Republican senator from, I believe, Massachusetts, Charles Sumner. He beat him with a cane over the topic of Kansas being either a slave state or a free state. And that was one of the lead-ups to the Civil War. The Democrats... I've said for quite a few years now, it's okay to be a liberal, but it's not okay to be a Democrat. Liberalism means you support, you know... You support the disadvantaged. You support science and arts. You support the environment. You protect the environment. You protect, you know, the marginalized. And that's true liberalism. And true conservatives have no argument against that. What we're seeing a lot of, and really the biggest problem with Democrats is all that's a front to them. It's a disguise. It's a smokescreen. And a lot of the arguments for abortion that have persisted for 49 years since this illegal Supreme Court decision was passed back then, a lot of that is based on straw man arguments and the Montgomery fallacy. And I'm going to talk about some of that in the stream here. We're going to look at some reactions on Twitter to both Roe v. Wade being overturned, and also the Supreme Court decision Thursday securing the right to bear arms, and also the unconstitutional, the illegal red flag law that was passed in federal government today. So we're gonna discuss those. We're gonna discuss what we can do about that, and we're also gonna look at some of the psychological and emotional manipulation tactics that the left likes to use against the American people. When I say left, I don't mean liberals. I'm talking about Democrats, communists, all these phony liberals who pretend to have certain values, but they really just want to use us. I call it my Hans Gruber theory. If you've seen the movie Die Hard, you know what I'm talking about. So let's jump on to Twitter here. I've bookmarked several tweets here. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, if you don't like it, well, then you will just end up like these others. She's talking about the red flag law that was passed today, or that was enabled by the federal government. Sex strike. Abstinence trends on Twitter in wake of the Roe v. Wade ruling. So yeah, people saying, hey, we're not, women, a lot of pro-abortion women are saying, hey, we're not going to have sex with you. And that's like the entire point that the conservative Christians have been making for all these years. Abstinence works every time of strike. The left loves to diminish Representative Taylor Greene here because she's so effective. She says like it is. And I just love seeing her drop bombs here. Bombs. But here she's posting about Representative, supposedly, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. What is she saying here? Yeah, that's a big part of their psychological warfare. They delegitimize, they diminish the your arguments. They shut you down in conversation. They interrupt you. They refuse to acknowledge you or validate you. And what they're really doing is they're invalidating themselves. Like, if they won't, if they don't have the courage or the intellectual honesty to listen to other points of view, then they automatically lose the argument themselves. So we don't have to acknowledge them. Now, we got to be careful. We want to distinguish between the deceivers, like these people, and the deceived. I mean, I've got so many friends on Facebook who are upset about the Roe v. Wade reversal yesterday. And some of these are ladies who I know personally, and or some people who I follow and respect another, and I have great respect for another topics. But I just have the feeling that they're working on some false premises, like they've been lied to. And let's just read some articles here. Speaker Pelosi loses it over Supreme Court's decision that there is no right to abortion. This is from Becker News, great blog. The very Catholic Nancy Pelosi came unglued on Friday morning in the wake of the Supreme Court decision stating there's no right to abortion in the U.S. Constitution, thereby overturning Roe v. Wade. Pelosi first strode out to meet the media and refused to even say good morning, that it was bad. It was that bad. She said, there's no point in saying good morning because it certainly is not one, Pelosi said. This morning, the radical Supreme Court is eviscerating American rights and endangering their health and safety. But the Congress will continue to act to overcome this extremism and protect the American people. But Pelosi was just getting warmed up. Today, the Republican-controlled Supreme Court has achieved their dark, extreme goal of ripping away a woman's right to make their own reproductive health decisions, she went on. And that's one of those straw man arguments, or one of those Mott and Bailey arguments, where you take something that's legitimate and everyone agrees on, which is women's health, and conflate it with something that's controversial and pernicious, like abortion. Because of Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, and the Republican Party, their supermajority in the Supreme Court, American women today have less freedom than their mothers. Well, a lot of unborn baby girls have the right, the freedom to live, so. With Roe and their attempt to destroy it, radical Republicans are charging ahead with their crusade to criminalize health freedom. Listen to these words. Radical Republicans. She's using demeaning, diminishing language here in a tone of voice that arrogates, you know, a moral high ground. What is moral about ending a child's life? People think that an unborn baby is not a person yet. And if they're not a person in the womb, then when would they become a person? This is, you know, and you got to be careful. Were you deceived or are you a deceiver? Then she went on to say they cannot be allowed to have a majority in Congress to do that. Republicans are plotting a nationwide abortion ban. But she not only railed against the Supreme Court and impugned its integrity, the speaker promised vengeance. We had passed that legislation really in order to make it the law of the land, she continued. It is clear that we must have a majority in November. Everything is at stake. If you're a woman, if you care about women, if you respect women, you know that this is a disgraceful, disgraceful judgment they have made. So, I saw on Twitter a lot of young ladies really happy about this. Let me try to find it here. Yep, Students for Life America. Outside the Supreme Court, the moment we became the first Roe generation.
Oh,
Okay, that's enough of that. But Samuel L. Jackson had to say, how's Uncle Clarence feeling about overturning Loving versus Virginia? That's the Supreme Court decision legalizing interracial marriage. See, that's an example of a straw man argument. Assuming that you are against abortion means they're assuming that you're against other issues that are genuinely liberal. So, I mean, my nephews are mixed race. You know, I'm conservative and I have no issue at all with interracial marriage. Most real conservatives are just fine with that. All these stories are kind of hodgepodge. So let's go to some of the articles here. Here are the 26 states where abortion will likely become illegal following the reversal of Roe v. Wade. This is from Gateway Pundit. Many states have trigger bans, meaning abortion becomes illegal once Roe v. Wade is overturned. 26 states will likely ban abortion or have near ban via the Guttmacher Institute. They are Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas. We're going to get to Arizona in a little bit here. Georgia, Idaho, Iowa, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, West Virginia, Wisconsin, Wyoming. I was listening to Dr. Steve Turley. He says Wisconsin is an early, is kind of an interesting case because they've had anti-abortion laws going back a couple hundred years, and they never bothered to repeal them once Roe v. Wade was first declared. And now, once it's been reversed, they probably go back to those very old abortion laws. So that's kind of, that's interesting. States that are likely to ban abortion are Florida, Indiana, Montana, and Nebraska. So, and this is what should have happened all along. The real purpose of Roe v. Wade wasn't, you know, abortion one way or another. It was basically an usurpation of the courts, violating their own, you know, usurping the authority of legislative bodies, whether it's the legislature in the federal government or in the states. This always should have been an issue decided by state legislatures, who are in the members of those legislatures are elected by the people. And supposedly, we're going to talk about voter fraud much later in the stream, but when you think about all the chances that the federal government had to make a nationwide law permitting abortion when Obama was president and the Democrats had a supermajority in the Senate and Congress, right now, when Joe Biden's squatting in the White House, then there's majority in Congress, they could have made laws. Now, whether that's constitutional or not, whether the Supreme Court would have struck it down one way or another, they didn't do it because they wanted that, you know, that issue to be upended. What the left does, what their mindset is, they hate the rule of law. They hate the Constitution because it limits the government's power. The Constitution lists the rules that the government must follow, not what the people must follow. Whatever laws the people have to follow, those are written by Congress and state legislatures. They're called the National Charter. They're not the Constitution. This is all about disrupting the American system of government. That's really what was the root here. The left, and by the left I mean Democrats and even communists and socialists, they want power. And for that, they have to unmake the Constitution. So getting on the topic of Arizona abortion protests. Police released tear gas, Lawmakers held hostage in the state Senate building. This is in New York Post from today. Law enforcement officers in Phoenix, Arizona, used tear gas to break up a sizable group of protesters outside the state's Senate building following the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn the landmark abortion ruling Roe v. Wade. Protesters threatened to break the Arizona Senate entryway glass, Republican Senator State Senator Wendy Rogers tweeted, as members were in the middle of voting on a series of bills. The situation escalated into a hostage situation as lawmakers were instructed not to exit the building, so Arizona State Senator Kelly Townsend said. The Republican Congress of the State Senate later called the protest an attempted insurrection. We are currently being held hostage inside the Senate building due to members of the public trying to breach our security, Townsend tweeted Friday night. We smell tear gas, and the children of one of the members are in the office sobbing with fear. I expect a J-24 committee to be created immediately, she added, referencing the January 6th committee that is investigating the so-called insurrection of the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th, 2021. And that wasn't an insurrection. That was a false flag. It's been proven. It's been settled that President Trump was still speaking in the ellipse while the U.S. Capitol building was being broken into. Those were not Trump supporters who broke in there. I mean, I saw pictures of a guy carrying a Confederate flag, and that to me was the clear signal that those were not true conservative, patriot Trump supporters. True conservatives freaking hate the Confederacy. They hate slavery. They hate what the Confederacy stood for. But now you got rioters disguised and mixed in with protesters causing shit. This is the party of Preston Brooks. This is the party that resorts to violence when they don't get their way. Which is why the Supreme Court ruled on gun control the day before. We're going to get to that. AOC's chanting partner, Revolution, and how the SCOTUS is endangering birthing people. So, Democrats, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Maxine Waters, that's another evil ghoul, were out in front of the Supreme Court on Friday after the decision overturning Roe was handed down by the Supreme Court. AOC chanted that the court was illegitimate and that the people needed to get out into the streets. Maxine Waters called on people to defy the Supreme Court. And this article is from redstate.com. We already played that video. AOC was being egged on and assisted by a woman with a megaphone dressed in green. That woman was Sansara Taylor, who is part of RevCom, the Revolutionary Communist Party, which was started by Bob Avakian. She was even wearing a RevCom t-shirt. So what was AOC doing with her? So this tweet, let's watch this video. Okay, I don't see the RevCom t-shirt. Oh, there she is. Yep. So, what's that mask say? Divil? BNL? Something that needs to be looked into. Continuing with the article, Taylor was also a co-founder of Refuse Fascism, the group that led a lot of protests against President Donald Trump with the goal of getting him booted out of office. She's now an initiator behind Rise Up for Abortion Rights as a group that notes on their website. That's a group you see dressing in green out in front of the Supreme Court and at the justices' homes. So, while there are people who are independently upset about the abortion decision, the author thinks it's important to point out the common threads between the protests that you've seen over the past few years. The animating cause may vary, but there are some who are always pushing for people to be out in the streets and push the country further left. I don't know about pushing the country further left. It probably seems to me like an intimidation tactic. And they're probably, now that we're in another election year, we've got the midterms in November of 2022. The left is looking back at 2020 and the George Floyd riots, the BLM protests and the riots and demonstrations, and where Antifa was mixed in with that. They think that was a grand old time. They got so many political donations they were able to funnel to the Democrats. You might have heard of Act Blue. Act Blue is like a kind of a financial service used by Black Lives Matter. And a lot of that was skimmed off the top and given to Democrat politicians. And we've since learned that BLM is a scam. It's clear that Black lives do matter, but the organization Black Lives Matter, their founder was using that money to buy mansions in LA. They were using that to throw parties, not really doing anything to address police brutality and support people of, you know, color, people who are let down by the system. That's, you know, such a gross betrayal of the idea of a nonprofit institution, nonprofit organization. You know. Continuing with the article here. What's funny on top of this was how Taylor then followed up that moment with AOC, saying that if you didn't want to keep losing to the fascists, you had to stop relying on and voting for the Democrats and get organized for revolution. Because, of course, that's the aim. Censaro tweeted, "Want to keep losing to fascists? Relying on voting the effing Democrats. Want to start winning? Take the streets, wage resistance, learn about, and get orged for a revolution." So, that's who AOC was chanting illegitimate with. Someone who does want a revolution. Talk about tearing down norms. By the way, here's Ocasio-Cortez refusing to condemn the violence as we reported, but also wearing the green kerchief of Sansara's Rise Up for Abortion group. So,
will you condemn the violence proposed by pro-abortion groups? Will she not condemn it? Are you not condemning the violence proposed by pro-abortion groups? So I guess no condemnation.
So this video goes on for a minute and a half, almost two minutes.
Can you not touch me?
So, click on Mary Margaret Olahan on Twitter, and you can watch that later. If you think it's, and this is a case of projection, they want to be violent because they think conservatives and patriots and true liberals are violent. We support, you know, the Second Amendment. We support the right to bear arms. We conservatives have always been saying, you know, the Second Amendment is like our defense against a tyrannical government. So they're just, they think they're following the same logic, but the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary to, you know, preserve the nation. The meaning of regulation, of well-regulated in the 18th century, doesn't mean government-controlled. It meant trained and disciplined. You know, if you ever practice martial arts, if you're in one of those, if you're in a true martial arts class, like in karate or taekwondo, they teach that martial arts is strictly for self-defense. There's an old proverb in karate saying, there is no first punch in karate. You always let, you defend yourself, and then you counterattack. You don't become violent first. So the article goes on. Wish they'd talk more about Maxine Waters. But there is a case here of why are multiple pallets of bricks left out in Washington, D.C.? I saw pallets of bricks in my city during 2020. Representative Lauren Boebert, Republican of Colorado, announced that multiple large pallets of bricks have been left out in Washington, D.C. The bricks are located not far from the Supreme Court building and House offices. So she tweeted this out. "Bricks laid out in downtown Washington, D.C. reminded many of similar occurrences during the violent serial criminal George Floyd riots in 2020. During the riots, pallets of bricks were routinely found along protest routes in a number of cities that suffered violent riots. In June 2020, police in St. Louis, Missouri, identified pallets of bricks that were believed to be connected with riot activity. We have learned of and discovered stashes of bricks and rocks in and around the plaza in Westport to be used during a riot, announced the Kansas City Police Department on May 31st, 2020. If you see anything like this, you can text 911 and let us know so we can remove them. So similar instances were reported in Minneapolis, New York City, Dallas, and Washington, D.C. So, yeah, these tweets are from 2020. Pallets of bricks. The Washington, D.C. brick pile comes as far-left extremists have promised a night of rage in response to the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The night SCOTUS overturns Roe v. Wade, hit the streets, you said you'd riot, said the far-left extremist group Jane's Revenge in a statement. To our oppressors, if abortions aren't safe, you're not either, signed Jane's Revenge. One group, which has claimed responsibility for firebombing attacks in Madison, Oregon, and Iowa, distributed flyers around downtown Washington, D.C., encouraging people to riot over the past week. So, not only that, according to Zero Hedge, Department of Homeland Security communicates specific threats facing pro-life organizations, churches, as they brace for a night of rage. So, an internal document obtained by Newsweek outlines intelligence shared by the Department of Homeland Security with the Catholic Church of a planned night of rage targeting churches and pregnancy centers over their opposition to abortion rights. The document sheds light on how law enforcement and the church are bracing for backlash after a leaked opinion showed the Supreme Court preparing to rescind federal abortion rights. There's no right to an abortion. 2 days ago, Zero Hedge detailed an initiative by the pro-abortion group Jane's Revenge to widely distribute flyers in the D.C. area after recently declaring open season on pro-life groups and crisis pregnancy centers. It appears there's similar planning across various cities and states, particularly California, according to Newsweek, which details more from the DHS memo. Labeled an urgent memo, the document is from the Diocese of Stockton, California, and is directed to all clergy, as well as parish and pastoral staff. The memo states that Jesse Rangel, a DHS agent, told the diocese that federal law enforcement has discovered a manifesto from an extremist group calling for attacks on churches beginning at 8 p.m. the evening the court issues its opinion. And they actually did that in the morning. I was checking Twitter yesterday. So, they're openly saying it. And they're openly threatening the Supreme Court. This is from Gateway Pundit. At least two Supreme Court justices have been moved to safe locations due to threats of violence from the left. This is from yesterday, actually. At least two Supreme Court justices have been moved to safe locations, according to federal law enforcement sources, Red State editor Jennifer Van Law reported. It's unclear which justices were moved to safe locations. So they probably don't want to say. And they don't want people to know where they're going to. It's all undisclosed. This is what we're dealing with. Now, if you've been pro-choice in the past, like if you've, you know, if you're very sympathetic, or if you are one of some young, if you are or have been some young woman who has been put in a very, very, you know, tenuous situation when it comes to like sex and pregnancy, these people are not really representing you. These people, you know, I'm trying to think of the words here. These people don't really care about, you know, they don't care about your situation. They care about undoing, you know, the rule of law. There are so many solutions that have been blocked by the culture and by, you know, busybody politicians, that would have helped you in your situation. You know, now that we've got, you know, a reversal on Roe v. Wade, now we need to talk about, you know, making adoption more tenable for American families. You know, adoption has been so expensive and so, you know, tightly controlled by regulation that it's almost, it's very hard for families to adopt, you know, unwanted pregnant, adopt children from unwanted pregnancies. Also, you know, one of the arguments against, you know, arguments for abortion is you don't want a child growing up in an abusive family. Well, we need to, you know, that's what a lot of religious faith-based organizations and a lot of nonprofit groups can help with. You know, they can help with, you know, I know of the a group here in my city, the Waypoint organization. You know, they are, you know, they're domestic abuse, you know, they offer like a safe house and they offer, you know, resources for people, for victims of domestic violence. Now, you gotta be careful because maybe, I'm not saying anything against Waypoint. I don't know. I have heard, you know, I have seen posts on social media recently that some nonprofit groups are fronts themselves, like they might enable trafficking, heaven forbid. But this is where we need citizen journalists on social media taking up the information war. This is where we need people, you know, digging for the truth. This is where we need people, you know, being able to express their opinions freely and being able to offer proof and evidence and logic. You know, I sell t-shirts on my website, and one of them says, I don't care about your title. I care about your evidence. I believe that's here. Yep, right there. On my merch shop. So go ahead and take advantage while you got a chance. So, and if you do want to support this program, you can leave me a super chat on Streamlabs, or you can click on the link to my resources link and buy some merch and or avail yourself of one of my resources that I offer. I've got some affiliate links here. If you want to invest in cryptocurrency, but you're kind of, you know, a newbie at it, this platform, Uphold, is very, you know, very easy to use and beginner-friendly. In fact, I use it for most of my trading and investing. There's also KuCoin, which is a more advanced exchange platform. Lets you even use a crypto trading bot, which will make money for you passively. And there's, you know, iTrust Capital, which lets you start a retirement fund in either cryptocurrency or gold and silver. Acre Gold, which is a company that'll let you, you know, buy physical gold and have it delivered to your residence. You pay a subscription and it gets delivered to you every month. And here's a very important service that I want to promote: MarketWagon. They're a company that lets you shop for food from local farmers and producers in your area, local bakers, local farmers. So if you're concerned about all the food processing plants getting burned down and all the and supply chain issues, take advantage of MarketWagon, and they'll have food delivered to you by, you know, local drivers. Like, I drive for MarketWagon, all right? And I have driven for them for a while. So that's, you know, a very important service. So let's talk about self-defense, because that's the other big topic of this week coming from the Supreme Court. New York Post writes, Supreme Court overturns New York law on carrying concealed weapons. So the Supreme Court has struck down New York's century-old law restricting the carrying of concealed firearms, its first major Second Amendment decision in more than a decade, and ruling that could lead to more guns on the streets. Writing for the 6-3 majority, Justice Clarence Thomas said Thursday that the law's requirement of New Yorkers who want a permit to carry a handgun in public to show proper cause that the weapon is specifically needed for self-defense violates the 14th Amendment by preventing law-abiding citizens with ordinary self-defense needs from exercising their right to keep and bear arms in public. The decision concerns New York law. It's likely to affect a handful of other states with similar permitting regimes, including California, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. So this whole issue of needing to show a proper cause to own a weapon, that's in direct conflict with the red flag law that was passed and signed this week. Breaking. Resident Biden signs red flag gun reform bill into law. Endangered Second Amendment takes guns from legal gun owners thanks to 14 GOP turncoats. Now, I have said most of the Republicans in D.C. are useless. It's going to be up to Republicans at the state and local level. I've been really impressed with what they've done and how they've stood up for the people. So let's read the article here. On Saturday, Resident Biden signed into law the first major federal gun safety legislation passed in decades, including multiple red flag provisions that endanger the Second Amendment rights of Americans. God willing, it's going to save a lot of lives, Biden said as he finished signing the bill. The House on Friday passed the bill 234 to 193, including 14 Republicans voting with Democrats. The Senate passed the bill in a late night vote Thursday. The 80-page bill, why does it need to be 80 pages? It was released Tuesday evening and includes expanded background checks for gun buyers under 21, provides grants for states that implement red flag laws, and offers additional funding for school safety measures and mental health services. So that's another case of the Mott and Bailey Foundation. They offer things that sound good, and they mix it in with things that are like absolutely legal, absolutely evil. What's a red flag law? It's if someone even thinks you are suspicious or you have, you know, maybe a mental illness, all they have to do is accuse you of that, and then you're prohibited from exercising your constitutional right. There is a very good diagram on Twitter that I bookmarked. Yep. How red flag laws kill peaceable people. This is Randy. Randy posts a harmless picture of himself and his son at the range. Karen sees Randy's post and calls local state agents to report suspicions that Randy might be a risk to the community. Biased state agents look at Randy's social media and use the newly granted red flag powers to claim that Randy is a dangerous threat. Without allowing Randy a defense, state agents and local court determined it's okay to confiscate his guns and use deadly force. Randy is awakened at 3 a.m. by loud crashing noises, flashbangs, and death threats while his wife and son scream in terror. Randy is murdered while instinctively trying to protect his family. So that's kind of a very dramatic, hypothetical, but this violates both the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and the policy of being, presumed innocent until proven guilty. What other amendments in the Bill of Rights does this violate? Does it violate the Fifth? The Sixth? Yeah, the right to a speedy trial? The right, I guess the Fifth is not being forced to perjure yourself, but Marjorie Taylor Greene again, passing red flags was not a solution by Democrats to stop mass shootings. It'll be a tool to disarm any gun owner that wants to stop abortion, the trans agenda on kids, mass illegal immigration, and bigger government oppression, suffocating our families, faith, and freedoms. And she goes into a Twitter thread. So a lot of this, you know, is supposedly in response to the mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Let me find what the Hodge twins said about that. Yep. It's disturbing to hear that the Uvalde police chief, who lied and failed the children in the school shooting, has donated money to two gun grabbers, Biden and Beto O'Rourke. It's all starting to make sense now. It seems his actions were politically motivated. So, yeah, the police chief in that town, you've heard the story. The police who were at the scene waited, what was it, 77 minutes before they went in? And even while that shooter was killing kids, and even then, even when they got inside, the security cameras show that they just kind of like stood around. And they detained parents who wanted to go in and take care of that dipshit by themselves on their own. So, I mean, I don't want to jump the gun. I don't want to make a false, prediction. But how much you want to bet that Uvalde was planned? How does an 18-year-old high school dropout get the money to buy that high-end gun that he used? Where did he get the money to buy that pickup truck that he crashed in the ditch? There's so many signs that that incident does, they're suspicious. It's like, you don't want to jump to conclusions, but there are plenty of pieces to put together. And now they just rammed this, bill through. That's been on the wish list for a long time. A lot of psychological manipulation and abuse by the government depends on false premises. I'm not saying those kids weren't murdered. They weren't really killed. They were. But this is a case where, yes, the citizen's right to self-defense is paramount. It's elemental. If the police aren't going to do their jobs, then regular people ought to be able to defend themselves. Self-defense is a human right. So, New York Governor Hochul pledges to convene legislature to define places one can't carry guns. SCOTUS decision is reprehensible. We kind of knew she was going to say that. I mean, she was Andrew Cuomo's lieutenant governor. And I don't know how many people know that Andrew Cuomo is a mass murderer. He put senior citizens into nursing homes to intentionally get infected with COVID or something. Social media posts could lead to gun confiscation under proposed red flag laws. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf suggests. Now, is he really the governor? So this is what that diagram on Twitter said. You got to be careful. People can look at your social media posts, and even though it's like totally justified under the moral law, under common law, they can usurp that. They can go through and violate that. Oh, this is how this is where that one meme came from. They're parodying this diagram. This is Jane. Jane's social media contact, Randy, posts photos of guns and cryptic messages. Jane calls the police to report the posts. The police petition in court temporarily removed Randy's guns. Police provide evidence that Randy is a danger to himself and others. The court agrees to a temporary removal of Randy's weapons. Okay, if you've ever been persecuted, if you've ever been bullied in school, if you've ever been, if you ever been in an abusive household, I don't see how you can be wired to trust anyone in this situation. And a lot of people don't. So. We're going to talk about what we're going to do about the gun control laws in just a little bit here. No chats on YouTube. No rants on Rumble. Messages on Facebook. Not at the moment, but I'm still an up-and-coming channel. So before we move on here, I just want to plug another way for me to pay the bills. I offer some white label web design and digital marketing services on my website. Click on the link to NateHausman.net. Click on the Work With Me tab in the menu, and you'll see like an online, you know, shop page where you can order, you know, your own website, marketing services that which you can pay for monthly. You know, a quality business, small business website can cost a few thousand dollars, like between $2,000 and even $8,000. But with these plans, you can break that up into monthly payments, starting around $49.90, you know, monthly. That's the reporting set. If you want a website, you can get a 3-page website and pay $89 a month for that. So it's very important that your business be online. And if you don't own a small business, you can still own an online business that you can run from your house. With inflation cutting into your salary and wages from your job, you really can't rely on just one source of income. You need to have a hustle. You need to have a way to, you know, make additional income or something else to rely on. So, and the internet gives us so many opportunities to do that. So click on the link and get started, and I'll earn a, you know, help yourself and support me, because I'll take a little commission from that. So let's move on here. On the topic of red flag laws and, you know, gun control, the SCOTUS made the decision, and they have signaled that any future such law will be repealed, will be declared unconstitutional. Now, the left, the Democrats who control the government right now, they're counting on maybe a little interim period where their law will be in effect, and they're waiting, you know, and it'll take time for the case to get up all the way through to the Supreme Court to be decided on one way or another. So what, how can citizens defend themselves in the meantime? Well, we gotta, you know, be active in the state, in your state and local government, in your counties. You know, there's a very, you know, controversial notion of idea called nullification, saying that states can nullify unconstitutional laws that are passed by the federal government. And that's, you know, the idea is states have that authority because they're the bodies that first ratify the Constitution, that, you know, empower the Constitution. If something is unconstitutional, a state can decide whether or not they'll enforce it within the state borders. It is controversial. You know, there's good and bad sides to the argument. You know, it's very risky because it could, you know, it could lead to secession, which is what the whole Civil War was about. You know, laws abolishing slavery. Slavery were, you know, a topic of the pre-war period. But then again, if the federal government does something illegal and tyrannical, then we ought to have some sort of body to counteract that. So, and that's really the whole point of the idea of separation of powers. You know, the federal government is split into three branches, and they each have their own responsibilities so that no single person within government can become a law unto themselves. And states, you know, the whole idea of states' rights is kind of like an extension to that. You don't want the federal government to become overpowerful. You want there to be a balance between federal and state authority so that neither of them get too powerful. So something else that's been being worked on is two-thirds of U.S. counties have passed Second Amendment sanctuary laws. You hear about, you know, sanctuary cities on the topic of illegal immigration. Well, there are also sanctuary cities and counties that'll uphold the Second Amendment, who will refuse to enforce, you know, unconstitutional federal law. A majority of U.S. counties have now passed laws designating themselves as Second Amendment sanctuary cities areas to thwart attacks on our rights by the left, including Joe Biden. This article is from almost a year ago, July 6, 2021. As of June of 2021, 1,930 counties have passed some level of protection for their citizens' Second Amendment rights. The number represents 61% of 3,141 American counties for the equivalent. So what that means is the sheriffs in these counties are not going to enforce, you know, any of those federal gun control laws. Now, it might be up to federal law enforcement, like the FBI or the marshals, to enforce that, and maybe the sheriffs or police might have to step aside for that. But police and sheriffs aren't necessarily obligated to in these counties, and that's why it's so important for, you know, to oppose the whole defund the police movement, because it's true that police and sheriffs can be abusive, but it's also important to contain those in, you know, certain cities. There are some people who think the whole defund the police movement is another front with an ulterior motive, and that is to create a nationalized police force. Police in cities that are, you know, run by the federal government, not the local government. And if there's a nationalized police force that's controlled from a central location, then that's, you know, it's going to be a lot harder to, you know, find alternatives. It's going to be, if you don't like the police in your city, it's going to be a lot harder to move away to another city or another state with better police, with better sheriffs. So that's why it's so important to have options. Options are going to be our defense against tyrants in government. Decentralization. That's one of the big themes of the whole Constitution and the whole Federalist idea of government that was devised in America's founding. You don't want centralized control. You want cooperation between the states and counties and cities, and some common laws in common, the whole, you know, interstate commerce idea, but you also want it broken up so that no one city or state has control over the others. No one city or state controls the whole country. And that's the reason I support Bitcoin so heavily, is because changing the subject to economics, Bitcoin is decentralized. It doesn't run on a single computer. It runs on computers all around the world. So no single person or organization can control Bitcoin. And that's in contrast to the whole idea of central bank digital currencies that are being floated by the Federal Reserve and certain governments in the European Union. So you always want options. I promised we would talk about manipulation tactics, and we're gonna look at this one listicle by choosingtherapy.com. This is this article is geared toward, you know, domestic abuse, whether it's psychological or physical. It's about relationships, whether it's in your family or in your workplace or in a relationship. But a lot of these, you know, tactics and ways of combating abuse can be carried over into the political debate. So 17, manipulation tactics. There is gaslighting, which a lot of people talk about lately. The act of making you question yourself, making you doubt your memory, your trust in yourself, your sanity, what you're feeling, and even your own identity. And this enables an abuser to take control over you. They make you trust the abuser. So, and that's, you know, that goes into the whole, you know, education system. You know, there you got teachers in the public school system teaching kids lies about history, about the founding of the country, about how America might have its flaws, but it's always worked towards overcoming them. They want you to doubt your memory. They want you to doubt your history. Number two, triangulation is when two people disagree and a third person gets pulled into sway which side wins. A manipulator strategically uses triangulation to ensure that their side wins the argument, which can include choosing a third person they know will agree with them or front-loading the information to be more favorable toward their side. So if you're having an argument with someone, the abuser will try to get the first word in and take over the conversation. They'll try to interrupt you and not let you have your say. So, or they will assume that they will kind of like arrogate a sense of mainstream acceptance. They'll try to make you think that the majority agrees with the abusive position rather than the just position. And that's the whole issue behind, you know, election theft. Tyrants want to make their victims think that everyone else supports the tyrant. There's also projection. That's a huge problem with the left. Projection is a defense mechanism where a person puts their own feelings, characteristics, or faults onto another person. It can look like the manipulator saying, "You're so controlling," after the victim presents alternative activities or advocates to do something for themselves. They accuse the victim of being controlling when they themselves are controlling. They accuse their political opponents of being fascist when they themselves are authoritarian. They accuse one side of violence when they themselves are violent. You see the pattern? They accuse one news source of being fake news when they themselves are fake news. Number four, controlling your life. The goal of all manipulation is to increase control. But outside of controlling how you feel and behave, a manipulator can actually shape your life and daily what your life and daily activities look like. This can include controlling access to your money, financial abuse, preventing you from furthering your education, or even restricting what friends you can and cannot spend time with. The manipulator's goal in controlling your daily activities is to make you feel like you cannot function or make decisions without them. Yeah, they'll isolate you. Name calling. This is one I wanted to really, you know, go over. A manipulator will often label a victim's personality traits or behaviors in negative verbiage. That's what Nancy Pelosi was doing earlier when she made that speech. She was name calling the conservative members of SCOTUS. Leftists and propagandists do this all the time. They speak with a tone of voice, a dismissive tone of voice, and just, you know, with the intention of humiliating and demeaning a person and their point of view. They kind of want to give an impression in their victims, in the minds of their victims, and in the minds of everyone watching, that their victim is lesser, that they're not worthy of consideration or being taken seriously. If you see that kind of, you know, if you hear that kind of language, that's a red flag. Number six, generalizations. Generalizations are when traits of one person are applied to an entire group of people in the same demographic. For example, an example that a manipulative person might use could be, all women are more focused on themselves than on their partners. This encourages the victim to act or present themselves in a way that the manipulator sees as agreeable or easiest to control. This is the whole Mott and Bailey fallacy. You know, pro-abortion, the pro-abortion side accuses the pro-life side of, oh, they don't care about children after they're born. They don't care about women who are raped. They don't care about they don't care that adoption is so difficult. The pro-life side definitely cares about these things. They want to make it easier to adopt. They want to protect children. A lot of pro-lifers are parents themselves, and they care about their kids, and they care about other people's kids. They're taking maybe a few cases, the pro-abortion side takes maybe a few cases of abuse, whether by parents or by the church or by the government, and they apply that to all of their political opponents. Number 7, moving the goalposts. This is when a person essentially changes the rules of a situation midway through in order to prevent the other person from succeeding. This could be like giving additional stipulations needed for success or highlighting disqualifying elements of your success. A manipulator uses this tactic to keep the other person in a constant state of chasing their approval. And if you find yourself chasing someone's approval and they change the rules, you don't need their approval. They need yours. Love bombing. This is very sinister. Love bombing is when someone bombards a person with affection, intense emotions, and an excess of their time and energy. This can include gift giving, making elaborate declarations of admiration, and spending all one's time and energy in pleasing the victim. The manipulator uses love bombing to quickly build intimacy and trust. This is the bait to the trap. This also gives the victim an ideal interaction to pursue. In this way, a manipulator preys on a person's natural desire to feel wanted and appreciated and turns it into a tool to increase the victim's devotion to them. So, love bombing is basically how the abusers rope the victims into an abusive relationship. Change the subject. Topic changes are a normal part of conversations, but a manipulator uses this passive-aggressive tactic to punish a person and make them feel devalued. When a victim makes a valid point in the conversation or receives a compliment from another person, a manipulator will change the subject to prevent them from gaining any confidence. An emotional manipulator does this to make sure the victim feels like they cannot get praise from any source other than the manipulator, and to have the victim question their own abilities and intelligence. So, it's, in other words, it's deflection. Playing on insecurities. This is one that I get attacked with because I'm abstinent, because I don't have a partner right now, and I choose not to impregnate a woman in a one-night stand. People call me an incel. I know I'm not. I'm voluntarily celibate. I've had women approach me. I've turned down women. Leftists love to call me a virgin, as if they know one way or another. Unfortunately, emotional manipulators are highly skilled at noticing a person's insecurities and intensifying them, or they think they do. At the core of this, a manipulator targets the person's sense of shame, which is an internalized feeling of inadequacy. Since shame is a painful emotion that most people automatically try to avoid, triggering this encourages them to comply with the manipulator to avoid feeling it in the future. Silent treatment. While it's normal for a person to emotionally and verbally shut down if they're experiencing emotional overwhelm, sometimes called flooding, it can also be used to intentionally as a manipulation tactic. A manipulator will shut down communication and connection as a form of punishment. This can include withholding affection, any form of communication, and intimacy. So, passive aggressiveness, being dismissive or diminishing, that's similar to name calling. That's another one I want to highlight. When the victim makes a valid contribution in group discussions or has a success, a manipulator can react with a dismissing or diminishing comment in order to maintain control. This can look like giving reasons why the success was not earned or why the victim's valid comment is unworthy of others' attention and consideration. There's treating you like a child. A manipulator infantilizes their victim by purposely treating them like they're younger or less capable, or by outright treating them like a child. This is a form of gaslighting that's specifically geared toward reducing the victim's trust in themselves to handle responsibility. This can come in the form of talking down to a person like they're less intelligent, stepping in and taking over in the middle of a task the person is capable of doing on their own, or physically treating them like they're incapable of certain tasks. God damn, I think that's the whole reason behind welfare. The government, the left, hates that certain people can be independent. So they tell them, hey, you need help from us. You can't do it on your own. You can't trust your family and friends to support you. You need government assistance. And I think a lot of corporations use government assistance too, but that's another topic. Blaming the victim for abuse. When a victim of emotional abuse speaks up, it's common for the manipulator to shut it down by convincing them that they've done something to earn the emotional manipulation. This comes down to, you should have known better because of X, Y, Z reasons. This leaves the victim constantly second-guessing their actions to try and avoid negative interaction with the manipulator. So, guilt trips. A manipulator uses guilt trips in order to change how the victim feels. This could be something along the lines of, if you decide to go out with your friends tonight, I'm going to feel lonely and sad. So the manipulator's long-term goal is to convince you not to do the thing in the future without discussing it with them first. And guilt trips is the whole motivation behind the climate change debate. It's the whole, you know. I'm going to make a video in the next few days on the gas price crisis and the idea of, you know, climate change and fossil fuels and carbon credits and carbon dioxide. A lot of that is just psychological manipulation, trying to convince people in the Western world that they don't deserve their success. They need to feel bad because they're polluting the planet. Now, are they really doing it? I'm going to go over that too in that video, but that's topic for another day. Finally, using threats or coercion, i.e. Preston Brooks. Anytime someone uses threats to force or convince you to do something, it is considered emotional manipulation. This could include threats to leave you or take away something important if you don't comply with what they want you to do. It can even include a threat to hurt themselves. While they may not actually hurt themselves, it's important to always take threats of self-harm seriously. Holding your boundaries for physical and emotional safety is critically important, and so is encouraging the other person to seek professional help if they threaten self-harm. And they might threaten to hurt you, which is what the left is doing. So, like I said, there's no first punch in karate. We have a right to defend ourselves and use guns to do that. But you don't shoot first. You wait for probable cause. You use your discernment. You wait for clear violations of both the Constitution and natural law. You know. And this is what this is all leading up to. The midterm elections. YouTube and Facebook might not let me talk about this, and they might shut down the stream. So if they do, you know, I'm on Rumble, and the recording of this video will also be on Odyssey and several podcast platforms. But we've got the midterm elections. We've got so many, we've got so many activities trying to do a replay of 2020. They had the BLM riots. They had the COVID lockdowns. They had, actually, those are the big two. They had any discussion about, they had, you know, whole topic of disinformation about COVID or, you know, peaceful protests. They had social media. They had social media censorship. They think they succeeded in 2020, and they want a repeat of that in 2022. So But if you watched 2000 Mules, the great film by Dinesh D'Souza, where he interviewed True the Vote, Catherine Engelbrecht, and Greg Phillips, you know what really went on. Well, True the Vote has another project, has another big project going on, protectamerica.vote. This is on True the Vote's website. Let's actually go to that website, protectamerica.vote. And this is a team up between True the Vote and several county sheriffs across the country. Our vote is how we hold government accountable. Yep, that's the main way. We need to be informed and engaged. Citizens must be ready to vote, and sheriffs must be ready to enforce the law, as well as protect their constituents from any form of illegal activity. So, today we begin a national effort to equip sheriffs, educate citizens, and protect our elections. Election laws were put into place to protect every American voice, and those laws should be followed. So, go to protectamerica.vote, type in your information, and I think you can sign up for their newsletter. There's also True the Vote's main website, truthevote.org, and they've got a page on that. But the vote is what everything comes down to. And I keep saying on my live streams and on my recorded videos that the left and phony conservatives in the Republican Party, they're scared. They're only ramping up all this, you know, violence, intimidation, and lies because they know they're losing control. So I will let you go. But first, let me check, you know, comments. Nothing so far, but that's okay. If you find any of this content valuable, you know, the recording will still be up on YouTube, Rumble, and Facebook. So if you have any, like, questions or comments, post them below, and I will let you go. Again, if you want to support the program, you can go to natehousman.net, buy stuff from the store, work with me, or go to the resources page, and take advantage of some great resources and buy some cool merch. And if you do find this content valuable, please give it a like, a thumbs up, subscribe to the channel that you're watching it on, and share it with your with like-minded individuals. And maybe some people you debate, you argue with too. You know, if they're real liberals, they'll be open-minded enough to entertain alternative, you know, points of view. So show them also. I'm Nate Houseman, letting you go. And I want you to know that it's okay to stand up for yourself. Have a good one.